Hello and welcome to the Raw podcast brought to you by the Sunderland Echo. Joe and James here today, going to be reflecting on Sunderland's 1-0 defeat against Leicester City. It's five defeats in a row now for the Black Cats following last night's game. We're recording this on Wednesday and they've now slipped further away from the playoff places, actually now closer to the relegation zone ahead of Wednesday's fixtures in the Championship. So we're going to be talking about that and the change that Mike Dodds made to the side yesterday. And just looking at the stats, James, going back over it in the morning after last night's game, stats pretty even in terms of possession, 49% for Sunderland, 51% for Leicester. Shots, 17 for Sunderland, 10 for Leicester. Shots on target, 6 apiece. Corners, 6 for Sunderland and 5 for Leicester. But in terms of both boxes, obviously Leicester took that early lead with Jamie Vardy in the 13th minute. It's now 10 games that Sunderland haven't kept a clean sheet. But I just felt going forward that, again, Sunderland lacked that cutting edge. It's something that we've said a lot of times this season. It's now 2 goals in 5 games from these 5 defeats that they've had in a row. And I just felt, again, Sunderland, just although they were mounting some of that late pressure, you just couldn't, I think it's harsh to say you couldn't see where the goal was going to come from, but without Jack Clarke, without Patrick Roberts, without Alex Pritchard now, a lot has been kind of taken away from that forward line, hasn't it?
Yeah, it was going to take a moment of magic, something long-ranged. Obviously, Trey Hume hit the bar, or it was going to be a penalty decision. Obviously, there was one towards the end of the game on Dan Ballard, but in terms of working a goal from open play, get the ball into the box across the 6-yard box, I didn't see it. I thought Hamia was really isolated. I thought he was frustrated. His body language, he looked frustrated. Sunderland don't look to play to his feet. They don't look to play in behind. They clearly don't trust him, I don't think, at the moment. Hopefully that's something that can maybe grow. Is he showing enough? Is he doing enough running? Is he making enough of the right runs? I'm not convinced of that either. So it's the same old story, really. And when you take Jack Clarke out of that team, it's going to be difficult for them to score alongside Patrick Roberts as well, who's a big threat. And the stats you've read out there, I think that they sort of only paint half the picture, because I thought Leicester could have been out of sight maybe in the first 20, 30 minutes. Obviously, they had a fair few opportunities. And I actually thought Sunderland were going to get overwhelmed pretty quickly. Not really sure what happened to Leicester in the second half. I think Sunderland did improve a little bit. I know they've got a few injuries in the middle, and they were on a 3-game losing streak themselves. Yeah. So maybe that crept into their head a little bit. But I never really felt like Sunderland were going to equalise, to be honest. I thought the improvement was good and it was marked. And they did show some good spirit, but I just felt like Leicester sort of held Sunderland at arm's length for the most part, and looked pretty dangerous on the break. Shout out to Anthony Patterson, really, because he pulled off some really, really good saves at times.
I think as you said there, kind of the stats do tell kind of half of the story, because Leicester had something to hang on for most of the game, and it is easy to forget that they had lost 3 games in a row. There would have been some nerves there. They needed to win last night, and yeah, they had something to hang on to for most of the game after that goal from Vardy in the 13th minute. But just going back to the kind of striker situation, Mike Dodds stuck with Hamia yesterday, his second successive start after he started against Norwich. And I'm sure I've mentioned this on the podcast before, of last season when I spoke to Corey Evans, and Ross Stewart and Ellis Sims started the season really strongly last season. And he said, for the other players in the team, those two, Stewart and Sims, could make a bad pass into a good pass. Now I just feel with Sunderland now, they don't have those players up front that can kind of relieve the pressure off the rest of the team and can make something happen out of nothing. That may be kind of harsh on Hamir, because he's just come in and he's been asked to do a job when he's got very limited Championship experience. But for me, in the games that I've seen for the 21s and for Sunderland's first team in the Championship, he doesn't quite look ready to make an impact at Championship level. I think Rusin, out of the kind of strikers that Sunderland have got, has shown the most. I think that he's busy, he gives good work rate to the team, he works hard and kind of harries people and gives a bit more, but doesn't maybe seem like that natural fit for a centre forward. He seems more of a wide forward. And it's a difficult dilemma that Mike Dodds has got now, because does he stick with Hamir? Does he give him a run of games? He's had two now, but for me, he's not quite looked ready. Does he go back to Rusin? Does he go back to Burstow, who hasn't had a start, I don't think, under Mike Dodds in the games that he's taken charge of. Does he put Joe Bellingham up there? It's a tricky one now. Kind of what does he do between now and the end of the season in terms of who he does play in that forward role, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't want to be too much of a hypocrite on this issue, really, because I was one of these saying that it would be good for a striker at Sunderland to get a run of games. So, you know, I find it hard to go back on myself and really, you know, dig Hamir out. But I do think he has been poor. You've seen a lot of him for the under-21s as well, Joe. But I think in the Championship especially, like, you need to hold the ball up. That's something that Ross Stewart did really well. Ellis Sims did it well at times. They both ran the channels, Ross Stewart more so than Ellis Sims. They both ran the channels at the right times and it would alleviate pressure. I think that's an underrated part of your defence is your offence. So Ross Stewart could hold the ball up. He could harry down players. Thinking of that goal he scored against Sheffield Wednesday in the first leg of the playoff semi-final, he did that from nothing, just sheer perseverance, work rate, but also knowing the right time, having that instinct to smell that there could be something on. I don't think Hamir has that at the moment. He's only 20 years old, so hopefully he might come to it a little bit later. But I think in terms of getting up the pitch, getting a foothold in games, you do need your striker, especially when he's a big lad, to hold the ball up. And he just doesn't seem to do that. There's no respite for the midfield. There's no respite for the defender. There's no real outlet. But you could flip that as well and say that, does Sunderland really play that way? Does Sunderland really want to give the ball to Hamir? Do they trust him enough to give him it? As I said, they don't play to his feet. When Rusin's on the field, it's frustrating because he makes the runs in behind. He doesn't necessarily run the channels as much when he's playing through the middle, but he makes the runs in behind. But then Sunderland don't play in behind very often either. So it's really frustrating. Obviously, Roberts as well, when he's played this season, he's great at getting balls across that six-yard box. There's not been many runners to the front post this season for Sunderland. So it's all very disjointed. You know, I think being a centre-forward, you do need experience. Just off the top of my head, thinking about some of the loans that Harry Kane had. I think he was he at Millwall, Leicester?
Norwich
as well. He didn't set the world alight, and it does take a while. I'm not saying Hamir is going to be Harry Kane levels, but in the EFL and the Championship, it's really difficult. You know, the defenders are wise. It's a tough league. It's physical. And he's sort of having to mature on the job at the moment. But in terms of Sunderland right now, is he the best fit to be starting? I'm not sure. But Sunderland have invested in him. Six figures, we thought, in the summer. So it's really interesting. And then there's the other argument. You know, Rusin, is he a more of a wide forward rather than a striker? I would suggest probably yes. Yeah. Mason Burstow, do you want to play him when he's actually not your player? You may as well give one of the lads that you actually own a run. So I think it's, you know, it's indicative of where Sunderland are at the moment, all eyes on recruitment, but it's such a long-standing problem now, that striker situation, that it just has to be sorted in the summer, doesn't it? It just has to be sorted with quality, or somebody's got to improve depth, experience, options. It is an issue that won't go away, but it really needs to.
And just going back to that kind of the defensive side of the game as well. It's now 10 league games without a clean sheet. I think, as I mentioned before, having that striker who can just hold the ball up, who can relieve some pressure, who can make something out of nothing, that can help. It's not to say that the defence are completely blameless for some of the goals that they've conceded, but I think that obviously can help. You can defend from the front. But just in terms of how Mike Dodds approached the game yesterday against Leicester, the league leaders, who, as we said, had lost three in a row, it seemed like he went man for man kind of around the pitch, definitely out of possession, switched to a back five, it seemed like as well, with Jensen Seal keeping his place and Luke O'Nine and Dan Ballard playing alongside him. But we often saw them kind of stepping out into midfield to go with their man. And that man-to-man marking system was clearly something that Sunderland had deployed. How do you kind of reflect on how Dodds approached the game? It seemed maybe quite similar to when Sunderland beat Leeds back in December, when Mike Dodds was in charge. That seemed to be kind of the approach that he took to kind of put men behind the ball and hit Leicester on the counter-attack at times. But as we mentioned before, Sunderland didn't have Jack Clark. They didn't have Patrick Roberts to come off the bench and didn't kind of maybe have that attacking output to come on and change the game and to hurt Leicester, even though they were defending in numbers.
Yeah, I found some things online really disingenuous, actually, because I've seen some comments saying, you know, what formation was Sunderland were playing? You can't tell. It's really hard to tell. to be honest, I actually thought it was really easy to tell. It was a flat back five, pretty much, with the wing backs sort of getting a little bit further forward. And then it was a flat four in the middle. Chris Rigg was on the right. Joe Bellingham was mostly on the left. Yes, in the second half, it did get a little bit more chaotic as Sunderland were chasing a goal, which is what you'd expect. Substitutes coming on and off. Games do tend to get messy. But I actually thought it was really obvious what Mike Dodds thought to do. I thought the formation was really obvious. Whether it worked is a completely different question. What I will say, and it again goes back to the striking issue, I think Sunderland did set out to do sort of two banks of four initially, but the gap between that four in midfield and Hamia was absolute to the point where if Sunderland wanted to play to Hamia, they probably wouldn't have been able to anyway. So it's a very strange sort of disconnect there for me. And again, you mentioned Joe, it is about personnel. I mean, Clark would have really helped the team, so would have Roberts. Again, I think I mentioned on the podcast last week, it does feel like a perfect storm in that regard. So I didn't really have many problems with the way Mike Dodds sort of set up against Leicester. And barring the first sort of 20, 30 minutes, I thought that they sort of grew into the game, Sunderland. I'm hesitant to overly praise them because, you know, I didn't really think Sunderland should get anything out of the game. But there were positives in a sense that I could see the tactical plan. Yeah, it didn't really work, but the mitigating circumstances and factors. But I think for me as well is that, and I mentioned this on the whistle video that we do on YouTube after the matches, that I can still see that the Sunderland players are still sort of fighting and that they're still at it, if that makes sense. Yes, they're not performing probably to the levels they'd like, but they still seem motivated, they still seem hungry, they're still running. Yes, they're making a few mistakes, but it doesn't feel to me, Joe, like, you know, we've watched bad teams and it doesn't feel to me like they've gone, like they lost, if you know what I mean. It still feels like there's a willingness there. Obviously, you speak to the players most week as well. So what would your thoughts be, having spoken to them? They don't seem sort of downtrodden and downcast. I think you could spin that both ways, or couldn't you? You could say that's good, that they're not, the heads haven't dropped, or you could also say that it's a little bit deluded as well, because if Sunderland don't start, you know, improving soon, then the 9 points off the bottom three. So it's really interesting. But what does the dressing room feel like to you at the moment from the time you get with them?
Well, we spoke to Jensen Seal yesterday after the game. He was the player that the club put up for the post-match media duties. And he was obviously kind of a bit dejected from the result, but he was kind of trying to reiterate that message of we're trying to stay positive. We're a young group. We are trying to stay positive in the dressing room. And the positive was, I think, that Sunderland didn't go under when they went down, conceded that early goal when Jamie Vardy put Leicester ahead 13 minutes in. And you felt like if this continues, it could be kind of quite a high scoring game and it could be quite demoralising for Sunderland. And it could have been like that in the Swansea game. I felt where Swansea were getting a lot of chances, it could have been kind of 4-0 at half time. And Sunderland were quite fortunate it was only two and then ended up with a 2-1 defeat, which didn't look as bad. I didn't feel that was the case against Leicester last night. Aside from the first 15 minutes, I thought Sunderland did react well. Leicester didn't create as many chances after that first kind of 15-minute spell where they were very good. They were moving the ball around well, as you'd expect from the Championship leaders. But that was a positive for me from a Sunderland point of view, that it is, as we've mentioned before, a young squad with limited Championship experience. And they reacted well. And it seems to be in the dressing room that they are staying positive. I mean, the last five games, as we mentioned before, they've only lost by the one goal. It's not like Sunderland are losing 3-4 and it's getting really kind of embarrassing and very difficult for the young squad out there. They are reacting, they are sticking in games and could have easily had more points on the board from the last five games than they have done. So it is frustrating. And I think, as we mentioned before, it's kind of in both boxes, kind of giving away the odd goal and then just not having that attacking threat to outscore teams right now. But wanted to move on to one of the positives from last night, which was Chris Rigg, who made his first Championship start. As you mentioned, he kind of played in more of a wider midfield position with kind of a flat four in midfield, and the width was kind of coming from the wing-backs. How well that worked, kind of, you can debate that. But Rigg, I thought, played really well. I thought he was one of the positives. Didn't look out of place against a less midfield that had Parry Winks, Keenan Dewsbury-Hall, players that have been kind of established Premier League players, and I thought he was really good last night. Kind of got into tackles, wasn't afraid to take on the positive option, try and move the ball forward, try and carry the ball. So what did you make of his performance?
Yeah, really good, really positive, really strong. I think, you know, two of the biggest compliments that you can give him is that he's sort of 16, and you don't really think about that when he's playing. I think that's very telling. You know, his quality on the ball is it's really obvious. I do think you have to be careful with him. Obviously, you don't want to overexpose him. I think we're sort of seeing that with Joe Bellingham now. He's playing too much football. I don't think we're anywhere near that with Chris Rigg yet. So I'm looking forward to seeing him start more games in the future. You know, playing in the middle of the park is difficult. Yes, he was more towards the right, but he did drift in when Sunderland were in possession. Few stray passes with, obviously, Trey Hume was on his side in the beginning of the game, but they managed to get that sorted. And, you know, Mike Dodd said after the game that they didn't really want to take Chris Rigg off because he was actually affecting the game. Now, that is a huge compliment. At 16 years old, he's a real talent, and I think we're going to see a lot more of him because Sunderland need to play him really to have any chance of keeping him. He can go where he wants in the summer. He could have gone where he wanted quite recently, but he chose to stay at Sunderland because he believes that he'll play, and that he'd rather play in Sunderland's first team than Liverpool's under 21s or Bayern Munich's under 21s because there's a pathway at Sunderland. So yeah, really good to see him sort of get that first start under his belt. Didn't look out of place at all. And I think what's pleasing as well is that he always seems to want the ball. When those couple of passes went astray down the right-hand side at the beginning of the game, you thought, oh dear, like, you know, hopefully this isn't a recurring theme in the middle of the park. Because players with a certain mentality couldn't go down under those circumstances. But it didn't seem to bother him. He was just like, right, okay, crack on. I'll still try the next pass. And I think that's a hugely important quality to have in a youngster. And the second thing as well, another compliment is that at times in the second half, you were just thinking, just give the ball to Rigg. Just give the ball to him. And I think he could potentially make something happen because he's got that quality. So, yeah, very, very exciting. And well, you know, what a story it's been, really, from the FA Cup debut against Shrewsbury Town, you know, playing against Fulham, scoring this season against Southampton, Kerr Alexander. I think that's his 11th or 12th. It'll be 13 or 14 appearances for Sunderland in total. I think 11 in the league this season. So, yeah, really impressive. Can't wait to see more of him as the season goes on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's going to play a lot more in this kind of the remainder of the season. Looking at the table now, Sunderland 10 points off the Championship. That could be more after tonight's game. So it could get to the stage where not that Sunderland would kind of want to give up on the playoffs, but kind of understanding where they are and that they're going to have to kind of blood in these younger players, Chris Rigg being one of them. And I think people will need to understand that he is going to have dips in form. You look at Dan Neal, he's had dips in form and now he's a first team regular. You look at Joe Bellingham this season. Obviously, it's kind of probably his first season playing consistently week in, week out. Still only 18. Chris Rigg is 16. Of course, they're going to have dips in form, and they're going to have to. That's how they learn, and that's how they bounce back and kind of establish themselves as first team regulars. But looking forward to kind of seeing more of Chris Rigg, I think, for the remaining 10 games of the season. Another player that I thought looked bright yesterday is Adil Ashish, who came off the bench for the kind of. It was kind of the final half an hour, wasn't it, that he came on? And that's after Mike Dodds had made some comments. He was asked about him in his pre-match press conference and said that Ashish had kind of improved his focus and concentration over recent weeks. And I think you can see when you watch him, he's clearly got a lot of technical ability. Won't have played as much as he'll have wanted to since his move in the summer. He made that mistake against Ipswich, or kind of a couple of mistakes when he missed a good chance and then gave away the free kick. And it almost seemed like he maybe wasn't blamed for that, but he kind of took a lot of the responsibility for that, and then we hadn't really seen him much since that Ipswich game back in January. But he came off the bench yesterday. I thought he looked really bright. He gave Sunderland the threat from set pieces, gave them more of an attacking threat, kind of was driving into Leicester's box. So I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of got recalled to the team against Southampton on Saturday. What do you think about him?
Yeah, I think with Ashish, I think in all honesty, I think he's been poorly managed in his time at Sunderland so far. I think it's probably been tough for him. He signed a 5-year deal at the club, came in under Tony Mowbray, was just starting to find his feet, showed some flashes of real quality. Tony Mowbray then leaves the club. Michael Beale comes in. He plays against Ipswich Town, as you say. Michael Beale, let's face it, sort of hung him out to dry, really, afterwards. Then he's nowhere to be seen for months. I know he I think, did he have a maybe a, an injury niggle as well in that time somewhere as well? So, and I've got no doubt that maybe there was a little something behind the scenes, as Mike Dodds has alluded to, with attitude and application and stuff. But given the churn at the club, I sort of can forgive him, if you know what I mean, with him being so young as well. He's clearly got immense quality. On Boxing Day, Michael Beale brought him on against Hull City on the right-hand side. I don't think that's his best position. I think his best position is as a central attack midfielder. He set up a chance for Ballard at the end, didn't he, with a lovely through ball. Just a shame Ballard was on the end of it, the player with the least pace in the squad. But I think he's clearly got bags of quality. And, yeah, if he can get his application right, I think he could be really important for Sunderland. With him, I would like to see him have a run of games as well in one position, because he's sort of been in and out of it, hasn't he? And then, as I mentioned, he's been on the right. He sort of played off the left yesterday, didn't he, when he came on for periods. He can play through the middle. So, yeah, give him a run of games in one position, and hopefully that bears fruit.
Yeah, the thing is, I think Bellingham's obviously been playing more in that number 10 position, hasn't he, regularly? So it's been kind of hard for Ashish to break into the team. But just quickly, do you think it was a penalty at the end on Ballard, you mentioned there? I mean, when I first saw it, I thought, he's looking for it, and then looking back, I think Chowdhury puts his hand on Ballard's shoulder, which kind of gives... I don't think he needed to do that. That kind of gave the referee a decision to make, if you like. But I still think Ballard was looking for it and wasn't going to reach the ball before it got to the goalkeeper.
Yeah, I think there's a clear arm on the shoulder, and I think Ballard maybe just enacts his theatrics a couple of milliseconds too early, so he's felt the contact and he's gone down like a sack of spuds, hasn't he? Let's face it, if that was given against Sunderland, we'd all be absolutely livid, because he would have bought it. So I think on balance it was probably the right decision by the referee, who I actually thought had a decent game, to be honest. I think he has gone down too easily. Yes, there's contact on the shoulder, but big lad like Dan Ballard shouldn't be going down. Perhaps he just should have waited. I know it's very easy for me to say in front of my laptop screen with a bag of Doritos behind the camera that maybe in that split second he should have just tried to continue his run a little bit longer and maybe sort of see how that panned out, whether, you know, Chowdhury kept hold or whether he could have got the shot off. Maybe the ball was just running a little bit too far away, but I didn't really have too many complaints. I think he did go down very easily. Could understand why he did it. You know, he's maybe thinking, well, I'm not getting to that. And if I do get to it, it's a tight angle. I'm a defender. I'm probably not going to score it. And he's trying to win his team a penalty and draw the game. So I can understand why he'd done it. But no real major complaints. I didn't think it was a stonewaller. Certainly don't think it's anything to get too upset about. And yeah, I suppose a lesson really that he overdid it with the theatrics, didn't he? And that's probably what actually made the referee's mind up for him. I think if he doesn't go with the theatrics and sort of fling himself to the ground, I think he's got a better chance of getting it.
Well, Ballard was one of the players that came back into the side yesterday. He'd just served his two-match suspension for picking up 10 yellow cards. Now Luke O'Neill has picked up his 10th yellow card, and he's going to be suspended against Southampton and QPR. So you'd imagine that Sunderland would then possibly go back to a back four with Seale keeping his place and alongside Ballard. We've said before, it's a good thing that Ballard and O'Neill weren't suspended at the same time, otherwise there would have been a big dilemma for Mike Dodds. But O'Neill, no doubt, is going to be a big loss. Mike Dodds was asked about it yesterday in his post-match press conference and kind of said, well, I can't really catch a break at the minute. He's lost Patrick Roberts, he's lost Jack Clark, he's lost Dan Ballard for two games. Now he's going to lose his captain, Luke O'Neill. And that's going to be big in terms of kind of the leadership. As we've mentioned, in a young group, O'Neill is the kind of main leader there. And we've mentioned that people like Dan Ballard, like Dan Neil, have stepped up, but still going to be a huge loss, isn't it, having no O'Neill for the next two games?
Yeah, it is. I thought O'Neill quietly had a good game again yesterday. He does progress the ball out from the back. Is he the most natural defender in the world? No, but he's got great courage. I think he's developed instincts as well since he's been playing at centre-back. I don't know what Mike Dodds will do with it in regards to four or five, but just sort of spitball. And I thought Yelda struggled at left wing-back. I'm not sure that's his best position. He looks to me like he could be a long-term centre-back option rather than
said before that he prefers playing centre-back when he first arrived.
Exactly. So I'm just wondering, is there scope for him to come into the middle and either Hume goes out to the left and you play Pembele, or Callum Stiles goes to left wing-back, which is what he was sort of brought to the club as, so he thought. So there are a few options there, but again, it's as Mike Dodd mentioned, and he looked, I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, but he looked a bit depressed really when he was listening through all of the things that he'd sort of had to put up with since coming at the club. Obviously, Ballard suspended, Neil out. Clark out. He's had Roberts out. You know, he hasn't got Elise to call on. Sergen's unavailable. Huggins is unavailable. You know, there's all sorts he's had to put up with. So, yeah, I did feel for him. But I think, and again, what's underrated about Lugo 9 in this Sunderland squad is his experience as well. Obviously, he's got a lot of experience in the Championship, a lot of experience in the EFL. He's one of the only real players in that team with a great deal of experience. In terms of his age as well, he is a leader in that group. So, yet another blow, and Southampton away from home will be a tough game. They'll want to reverse the fixture at the Stadium of Light earlier in the season, the day after the summer deadline, obviously when they got thumped. They've barely lost a game since then, have they, under Russell Martin? So I think
they have lost three of their last five.
They went 20-21 unbeaten or something, didn't they? Ridiculous. So, obviously they've got a lot to play for. And it just feels like we don't really have a lot to play for. What's your thoughts, Joe, on the, like, because there's chat about relegation now for Sunderland. Do you think Sunderland have a realistic chance of being dragged into that? Because I just look at the table and I think, yes, it's 9 points, but it does rely a lot on other teams It does rely a lot on other teams improving. But if Sunderland don't, you know, pick up soon, you do start to lose confidence and you start that slow march towards the bottom of the table, don't you? And, you know, you've got to be careful because if you can turn around and everybody could be really optimistic and say, oh, the performances are there and we limited Leicester to 0.01 XG in the second half and all this stuff. And then 3 weeks later, you can be looking over your shoulder thinking, hang on a minute, Sheffield Wednesday have really improved under Danny Rowe and we're struggling. So I can sort of see both sides of the argument.
Yeah, I don't think Sunderland are in a relegation battle. I think there are too many teams down there, too many teams below them. And it's not like Sunderland are losing 3-4-0. We've mentioned that the last five games, they have been tight. They've lost by one goal. And I think Sunderland will, you know, they'll pick up enough points to stay up. Clearly now they are closer to the relegation zone than they are to the playoffs. And it does feel like the season's kind of just been drifting the last few weeks and it may do for the next few weeks. But I think there's too many teams down there for Sunderland to be caught. To be honest, I mean, I don't know what your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm always erring on the side of caution when it comes to Sunderland. I always sort of expect the worst. I think I've been conditioned that way over many years, sort of covering the club and being a fan as well. So it honestly wouldn't surprise me. But I do tend to agree. I'm just looking at the Championship table now. Obviously, Rotherham
is incredibly tight. I mean, there's how many teams on 38 right now?
Yeah, let me just count. There's Sheffield Wednesday, Stoke City, Huddersfield Town, QPR on 38, and then Birmingham on 19th on 39. The three teams above them, Millwall, Rovers and Argyle, they're on 40. So there's really not a lot on it. There is a cushion, as you say, between sort of the bottom and Sunderland at the moment. And you look at the teams and you think Rotherham are gone. Sheffield Wednesday are improving. I think they've won four of the last five. Stoke City look pretty dreadful when we've played them. Are they going to improve enough? Can't see it. Huddersfield Town, they look poor. QPR look poor. Birmingham have sort of had a little bit of a renaissance, won the last two.
You've got to remember some of these teams have got to play each other. So exactly, they're not all going to win at the same time.
I was just about to come on to that. So it does seem unlikely, but I think it's just one of those that, you know, stranger things have happened, haven't they? And I think if anything, it's more indicative of how this season's gone that we now are, we're sort of closer to the relegation places than we are the playoff places, given that the idea that when Tony Mowbray was sacked was to sort of push on, really. So it's been quite the fall, really, hasn't it, I suppose?
Well, moving on, it doesn't get any easier. As you mentioned, it is Southampton away this weekend on Saturday. As we said before, they have lost three of the last five league games, but they are still in with a shot of getting in the top two. They're playing tonight. We're recording this on Wednesday. So if they're playing Preston tonight. So if they win that one, they would move back closer to the top two. So big game for them. In terms of the changes that Sunderland can make, obviously Lugo 9 is going to have to drop out. That could mean Sunderland go back to a back four. I would expect probably, we've mentioned Hamir before, I'd think maybe Roussin would come back in. Just looking at some of the other changes that could be made. Oshish, we've talked about, is probably pushing for a start now. Kind of what sort of changes do you see Mike Dodds making for that Southampton game?
So I think he'll go Pato, Hume, Styles, Ballard, Sealt.
So you think Styles will come back in?
Yeah, and I think he might go Yelder in the middle. I think the midfield he'll keep the same. And then I think, yeah, I think Roosen will he persist with Rigg, Joe? Do you think he'll persist with Rigg?
I say persist
with Rigg like he's had a bad game, but what I mean is will he play Rigg for a second consecutive start? I think that's a question. You'd want Aushush to come in somewhere. I think Hemea has to drop out for me. He just didn't offer enough. And you know, just looking at Southampton's team, they played Birmingham, they won 4-3. Their front three is terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. Shea Adams, Adam Armstrong, and David Brooks. That's serious firepower, lad.
Yeah, and yet Sunderland beat them 5-0 at the Stadium of Light. But yeah, a lot has changed since then. Yeah. The one kind of before this kind of run of three games in a week, I thought Joe Bellingham might get a rest. As much of a key player he's been for Sunderland this season, but then Mike Dodds went and said that he doesn't see him as being tired. Kind of before the Leicester game, he has started against Leicester. He started against Norwich, so he was maybe one that I thought could maybe get a rest in this run of three, but maybe it doesn't look like that now. Aushish played well, but could he come in for Bellingham? Could they both play? That's going to be an interesting one. I think he'll stick with Rigg.
It's interesting, the Bellingham situation and sort of Sunderland's reluctance to drop him. They want to keep playing him. And I was watching the overlap with Roy Keane, Gary Neville, Ian Wright, Jill Scott, Jamie Carragher, and they had Ole Gunnar Solskjaer on, and he was talking about having Jude Bellingham, Joe's brother, at the at Old Trafford as a 17-year-old trying to sign him. And he said he'd never met a young player who was so clear about the minutes he wanted to play, and obviously his family were there and stuff like that. And it was like, no, he needs to play this amount of minutes. That has to be guaranteed. You know, this is my career. This is how I want it to go. I want it sort of mapped out. And it's very interesting, isn't it, hearing that the Bellinghams and Jude and Jode have such a clear thoughts on their career. And you just wonder if it's right for him to be playing so many minutes at the moment. Does he need just two or three games out? I really like Jode, but I think some of the criticism he's come in for has been unnecessary. He showed real glimpses of quality this season. People forget he's only 18, you know, approaching, you know, what, 31, 32 championship games this season. I think he's been an asset for Sunderland. His signing's been a net positive. But I think he just does need to come out of it for a little bit, because you can overexpose a player. I don't think his performances have been massively off it at all. I just think, you know, maybe sometimes you just do need to come and sit out, which Mowbray was prepared to do once or twice, actually.
And I just thought, well, the last game that he came out of the side was the Plymouth game, wasn't it? And he started on the bench and thought...
He came on and scored.
He came on and he looked fresh and he scored that goal. I think he set up another one. And he looked like kind of re-energized when he came off the bench in that game. And that kind of coming out of the starting 11 seemed to do him good. And it is, as we mentioned before, it is his first season playing week in, week out in the Championship. And that's a big ask for an 18-year-old, as well as he's kind of done in his first season. But Mike Dodds seems to suggest that he was ready to keep going. And yeah, it wouldn't be a surprise if he kept his place against Southampton.
I don't think there's many young players of his age at the moment this season who've played like 35 matches. I think Archie.
I don't think any of us thought he would play this much at the start of the season.
No,
the first signing from Birmingham.
I think Archie Gray at Leeds, he's still only 17. He's played a lot of football, but typically you don't tend to play 18-year-olds this much. And I think it's a compliment and a credit to him. And what I mean by, you know, the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer point I'm raising, I don't think he's there because of some sort of secret agreement, but I think it actually shows how highly he's rated and how high his talent's rated by sort of the coach and stuff at Sunderland, that they keep persisting with him when he maybe needs to have a break, and how sort of highly they value him to the team. But it is interesting. I would have given him a break long before now, to be honest.
Well, Sunderland's next game, as we mentioned, is away at Southampton this weekend. They will then have one more game at home against QPR before the international break. So 10 games left this season in the Championship. Sunderland looking to get their season back on track. James, thanks a lot for joining me on the latest episode of the Raw podcast. We'll have all the build-up, as always, over on the SAFC section of the Sunderland Echo website, and then we'll have live updates analysis from that game at St Mary's as Sunderland take on Southampton. So once again, thanks a lot for listening to the Raw podcast.